A reading from St. Luke's Gospel, beginning to read at verse 27, verse chapter 6. Love for enemies. And I tell you who hear me, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you, and pray for those who ill-treat you. If anyone hits you on one cheek, let him hit the other one too. If someone takes your coat, let him have your shirt as well. Give to everyone who asks you for something. And when someone takes what is yours, do not ask for it back. Do for others just what you want them to do for you. If you love only the people who love you, why should you receive a blessing? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good only to those who do good to you, why should you receive a blessing? Even sinners do that. And if you lend only to those from whom you hope to get it back, why should you receive a blessing? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. No, love your enemies and do good to them. Lend and expect nothing back, and you will have a great reward. And you will be sons of the Most High God. For he is good to the ungrateful and to the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge others, and God will not judge you. Do not condemn others, and God will not condemn you. Forgive others, and God will forgive you. Give to others, and God will give to you. Indeed, you will receive a full measure, a generous helping, poured into your hands, all that you can hold. The measure you use for others is the one that God will use for you.
The Old Testament lesson comes from Genesis, chapter 45, reading from verse 3. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But when his brothers heard this, they were so terrified they could not answer. Then Joseph said to them, "Please come closer." They did, and he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Now do not be upset or blame yourselves because you sold me here. It was really God who sent me ahead of you to save people's lives. This is only the second year of famine of the land. There will be 5 more years in which there will be neither ploughing nor reaping. God sent me ahead of you to rescue you to this amazing way and to make sure that you and your descendants survive. So it was not really you who sent me here, but God. He has made me the king's highest official. I am in charge of his whole country. I am the ruler of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and tell him, this is what your son Joseph says. God has made me ruler of Egypt. Come to me without delay. You can live in the region of Goshen, where you can be near me, you, your children, your grandchildren, your sheep, your goats, your cattle, and everything else that you have. If you're in Goshen, I can take care of you. There will be 5 years of famine, and I do not want you or your family or your livestock to starve. Joseph continued, Now all of you, and you too, Benjamin, can see that I am really Joseph. Tell my father how powerful I am here in Egypt, and tell him about everything you have seen. Then hurry and bring him here. He threw his arms around his brother's neck and began to cry. Benjamin also cried as he hugged him. Then, still weeping, he embraced each of his brothers and kissed them. After that, his brothers began to talk with him. Amen. Thanks be to God for the reading of his word.
Thank you very much for our readings this morning, for enriching our worship with your words and enriching with our music. Thank you very much. Those were, of course, the lectionary readings for this morning. And it was very interesting to read through them, and particularly that one from Genesis, which we're going to sort of be thinking a little bit more about during the course of the service, because, of course, there's this huge story behind the reading that we had there. And I've imagined what it was like for some of the brothers who were taking part in that particular scene that we heard read to us just now. One of which was called Zebulun, and he was one of the 12 brothers, 11 brothers, should I say, who met with Joseph. And I'd have imagined what Zebulun might have written back to his wife after that extraordinary day that we've just heard about. Of course, there's no proper postal system 4,000 years ago, so we'll sort of skip that one by. But let's imagine what Zebulun would have written to his wife all those years ago after that experience. My dear, as I sit down this evening to write this letter, I still cannot believe what has happened. How well we remember Joseph, my younger half-brother, who all those years ago we lost in the desert. We said that he had been devoured by wild animals, but as we know, we sold him to those traders that we met and who took him to Egypt. He was an annoying young so-and-so with all his airs and graces, and the way he tried to pretend he was better and more important than us. But my father was so devastated when his blood-soaked cloak was brought back to him, and he thought that his favourite son had been devoured by wild animals. And despite it all, how we have missed him over these past years and wondered what had become of him. We couldn't bear to tell our father the truth of what we did to him, and so we allowed him to believe for all these years the story of the wild animals. Well, please make sure you're sitting down as you read this, because I'm still in a state of shock. We as brothers are so overwhelmed with joy now, and we can't believe it. But we found out today that Joseph is still alive after all these years. Obviously, he wasn't killed by the wild animals after all, but he was taken to Egypt, as we know, but that today he is still very much alive. And what is more, we met him and we spoke with him. And there is more still. We found out about this when we saw the governor of this province in Egypt. We've seen him many times, and we're always puzzled because he wanted to see us so often. And occasionally, he would ask about our father. We wondered why this was and why all these questions, but we imagined it was just because he's a kind man, and it's the custom to be considerate around here. When we looked at him sometimes, he seemed to look at us as in this strange kind of yearning that we couldn't quite explain. And occasionally it seemed he was on the verge of weeping. But nevertheless, he was kind and thoughtful, And he gave us lots of grain, which is, of course, the very reason why we've come to Egypt. Well, today we finally discovered the truth. The governor we have been speaking to is actually Joseph, our long-lost brother. He finally told us this morning. And it's been so many years, and he looked so different that we didn't even recognize him. He dismissed all his advisors, so it was just us with him, and he suddenly stated, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" We were just too stunned to even answer. He went on to tell us again who he is and who he was, and how even though we sold him into Egypt, God had been able to use this situation for good and had been far-sighted to place Joseph as the governor so that years later he would be here to help us. He said, "So it is not you who sent me here, but God. He made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all this house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. As you see, we are completely in his power, as he is under Pharaoh, the effective ruler of this land. Yet he has been so magnanimous, so protective. After what we did to him, we might be terrified of the revenge that he might have sought to exact on us. Yet he has ensured that we have all the grain we need, and that we will be able to take it home to you and the family. And he even wants to meet our father soon and invite him to Egypt. After all we did to him, we don't deserve such kindness. We are overwhelmed and in a state of shock. This must be the best thing that has ever happened to our family. We are a whole and complete family again. And all because Joseph found forgiveness in his heart and is using the power he has to offer us protection. Please give my love to everyone back home. Be careful to share the news of this properly. We must still be careful to make sure my father never hears of what we actually did to Joseph, as he might never forgive us. But we must try and put the past behind us and be grateful for the blessing that Joseph is alive, that he is forgiven us and is doing all he can for us. I can't believe it. We are a family once again. Your loving Zebulun." At the start of each of the six volumes of Winston Churchill's monumental memoir of the Second World War, he quotes what he calls the moral of the work. We can almost hear him saying these words now. "In war, resolution. In defeat, defiance. In victory, magnanimity. In peace, goodwill." I have my granddad's set of this memoir back at home, all six volumes. The title of each of the volumes summarises in a few words the course of the war all those years ago that Churchill played such a monumental role in. Volume 1 is entitled The Gathering Storm. Volume 2, Their Finest Hour. Then The Grand Alliance, The Hinge of Fate, The Closing of the Ring, and finally Volume 6, Triumph and Tragedy. Although I've flicked through these volumes many, many times, I used to flick through them at my grandparents' house all those years ago, and my grandmother once, she saw me flicking through them as she did many times, and she said, "Oh, you have those." She said, "They were your granddad's, you can have those because you look at them all the time." So I flicked through them, but I've never actually read through them properly from cover to cover. Nevertheless, these words, in war, resolution, in defeat, defiance, in victory, magnanimity, in peace, goodwill, they remain so memorable. And especially for me, in many ways, from the theme of our service this morning, the third part of that statement is particularly important. In victory, magnanimity. Well, as we may have thought about in our reading earlier from Genesis chapter 45, and then through that fictional letter from one of Jacob's son, to his wife, it does seem that magnanimity is the word of the day. Cambridge Dictionary gives the definition of it as kindness and generosity, especially towards an enemy or someone we have defeated. And we've heard much of the background in the story of from Zebulun's letter, but let's just briefly remind ourselves of the background to this story. Jacob was, of course, the grandson of Abraham, the son of Isaac, and the Bible tells us that he had 12 sons of his own. Each of these 12 sons was destined to be the founders of the 12 tribes of Israel. But in our story, they are still one family, with all the family tensions that one can imagine, particularly having 12 sons. Imagine that. And it seems that one of the tensions of those 12 was that Jacob had a favourite son, which was Joseph. And we can only imagine the jealousies that surrounded that situation. Going back to my gran again, she always said that she had no favourites and she loved us all equally, which is as it should be. Well, she didn't have 12 sons, though. She had 2 sons. made that point. But Jacob had Joseph, his favourite. And it seems that Joseph likes to tell his brothers how much of a favourite he was, telling them of his dreams about how they would all bow down before him, and walking around with a special robe that his father had given him. And so one day, as his brothers were out in the desert, they decided to beat him up. And some of them wanted to kill him. But Reuben, the eldest, persuaded them to leave him in a pit so that he could actually secretly come back later and rescue him. However, before Reuben could do so, a caravan came across the desert, and the brothers sold Joseph to this caravan, and they took him to Egypt. Meanwhile, they persuaded Jacob, their father, that his son had been killed by wild animals. Many adventures followed for Joseph in Egypt. He was placed into the household of a man who liked him and made him an overseer. But he soon got into trouble when he refused the advances of the man's wife, who framed him and falsely accused him and had him put in prison. Soon afterwards, he was joined in prison by 2 officials from Pharaoh's household. And they both had a dream, and Joseph interpreted it correctly, saying that they would soon be freed. And indeed, they were freed and were sent back to Pharaoh's household. 2 years later, Pharaoh himself had a dream, but nobody could explain it to him. And then the 2 men remembered Joseph, who was still in prison, and suggested that Pharaoh ask him. So Pharaoh had him brought out of prison, and Joseph interpreted his dream about how there would be 7 good years with plenty of crops, and then there would be 7 lean years with famine. And he proposed a way forward of storing plenty of grain from the good years in barns. And Pharaoh was so impressed that he immediately made Joseph a kind of prime minister over Egypt and set him to work to implement his plan for those 7 good years, ready for the famine that would come. And so it was that Joseph was established in his powerful position when, years later, during the famine, his brothers came to Egypt seeking food for their family. The very brothers who he had beaten up and sold into slavery. Well, might Joseph have turned his nose up at them and refused to have anything to do with them. Or he might have wanted to carry out some kind of revenge against them. Lock them up. We've heard that one before. But no, he treated them with kindness and love. As we saw in our reading, the brothers were overwhelmed. So much for the background to our reading. But what about the actual reading there and some of the thoughts we can have from our reading in Genesis 45? Well, one thing that we can definitely learn from it is that, as so often, God is able to answer prayer in ways sometimes that we could never imagine, and in timescales that not necessarily as immediate as we might anticipate. Or we might prepare the way, prepare the ground in ways that we cannot imagine. I once heard of a man who prayed every night that for his son, that he would become a Christian and that he would find faith in Jesus. But it never seemed to happen. And eventually, the man died, and it was only at his funeral that the son really understood the depth of his father's faith and his prayers, and how important it was for him. And it was only that experience that eventually led the son to Christ. There's also the wonderful story in here, in this Bible reading about using the position that we have to do good, the position we have in life to do good. As John Wesley is reported to have said, "Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can." Joseph was able to use the position that he had to help his brothers and his wider family, as well as, of course, perform his main role, which was to prepare Egypt for the famine, so that as many as possible of the wider population could be saved. A leader and a politician using his powerful position in order to help other people. A bit of a novelty, we may say, particularly in our current situation. But this was something that Joseph was determined to do. We could say he was a do-gooder, or he was being very woke, but he was helping people in need. That was what he was about. But it was not just using our position to help other people, but it is also about helping them to when they have unambiguously done bad things to us, when they have been cruel and heartless in particular ways to ourselves, helping them even when we know that when the boot was on the other foot, they did evil things to us. Helping others, even though they are our enemies, or are people from a hostile nationality, maybe. Brothers plead for food and help now, but when they had the power, we know that they threw Joseph into that pit. In our reading from Luke's Gospel, which you had earlier, Jesus explains this further. "But I say to you that here, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. And then again, if you love those who love you, what credit is it to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And again, but love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return." These are difficult words to hear, especially in the culture that we are in, increasingly living in, where we are told by our leaders that we should only care about people like us, our own kith and kin, not worry about foreigners, people in need in other countries, or asylum seekers or refugees in other lands, when we are encouraged to console ourselves for any lack of generosity by thinking that, well, they must be scroungers, they must be criminals anyway. The new US Vice President, J.D. Vance, I looked it up, James David Vance, for those who are interested as to where the JD comes from. J.D. Vance, he recently came up with a brand new and novel interpretation of the Christian faith, which he recited in an interview that he gave, where he said that there is, in his view, a hierarchy of love, that we should first of all love our family, and then our neighbour, and then the community, and then fellow citizens, and then only after that should we have any concern at all for the rest of the world. That's what he said. But as one theologian, Joash Thomas, said, this is not a Christian idea at all. This is just Western individualism wrapped up in sort of Christian words. And as the Pope said, responding directly to J.D. Vance, Christian love is not a concentric expansion of interests, and we are not individuals who occasionally have philanthropic feelings, but instead we are to find our identity and vocation by care, especially for the poorest. We should meditate, the Pope says, on the parable of the Good Samaritan, where love is for all, without exception. And as we know from the parable of the Good Samaritan, the traveller who was beaten up and left in a ditch was a person who was implied to be a Jew, but who was nevertheless stripped and beaten, so it's impossible to tell what nationality they are. And the person who is kind was a Samaritan, someone who was distrusted at the time by the Jewish people. Who is our neighbour? It is the person who is in any need at that particular moment. Someone who is like this stranger. They may be indeed an enemy to us, but someone who we are able to help regardless of the past. We are called to love our enemies, and indeed to love all people, and to show compassion to whoever is in need. I just want to briefly mention one group of people who are often in the news, who we are increasingly told to look upon as enemies or people to fear, which is refugees. It's somewhat bizarre to me, having, when I hear these stories, having spent time with refugees from the Kosovan War in Serbia when I was, it was 20 years ago, but when I was in some of the refugee camps there in Serbia amongst some of these people, and seen some of the conditions in which they were living. I remember I was chatting to some young boys there, and they spoke Serbian, and I spoke English, of course, and I don't speak a word of Serbian, they didn't speak a word of English. But we communicated by juggling, and we had that shared language of juggling. And so we were able to juggle, and I brought some juggling balls with me, and I said, well, he was better than me, he learnt in 5 minutes. So I said, you have these juggling balls. And so he was playing with them. And also seen some of the, as well, the conditions of some of the children in refugee camps in Bethlehem. And I've spent some time with them as well. And a few years ago at the Methodist conference, we had a visit from an author called Anjali Rauf, who wrote a very good children's storybook called The Boy at the Back of the Class. I don't know if anyone's read The Boy at the Back of the Class, but here is some of the blurb that it says on the back about it. On a perfectly ordinary school day, something extraordinary happens. A boy with pale skin, lion eyes and a tattered red rucksack walks in. Unable to speak English and seated at the back of the class, Ahmed, the refugee kid, becomes the perfect target for bullies and rumours alike. But Ahmed has also captured the attention and empathy of a fellow classmate who will do anything to help him find his family, even if it involves a plan, or five, and the Queen herself. Told with heart and humour, the boy at the back of the class is a child's perspective on the refugee crisis, highlighting the importance of friendship and kindness in a world that sometimes doesn't make sense. And it was good to speak to Anjali after she spoke to the group, as she has worked and had come from some of the refugee centres around Calais that we've heard about. And she told of the wonderful people that she works with and how badly they are sometimes treated by the authorities. Sometimes, she told us, that they would refuse to register the birth of a new child so that they could not receive any help. And this would go on until the child was getting on, 2 or 3, that kind of age. Or they would steal, this is quite bizarre, they would steal a single shoe from people when they were asleep so that they wouldn't be able to go anywhere in the morning. Unlike Joseph's brothers, the refugees did not do anyone any harm, and yet they were treated appallingly. Refugees could be any of us. A few months after I spoke to Anjali, I did a tour of Ukraine. And who knows what's become of the people who I spoke to and met along the way. Although they told us at that time about the Russian invasion that had taken place in the east several years before, was still going on, it seemed such a long way away. And few could have imagined that 2.5 years after I met them and toured Ukraine, Russia would launch its full-scale invasion. Now there are fears for the Baltic states, for Poland, maybe for elsewhere in Europe. Refugees can be anyone. It's interesting to think as well of We tend to think of refugees as people without gifts or talents. Yet I wrote a list of some famous refugees. They include Albert Einstein, Sigmund Freud, Aristotle Onassis, Maria von Trapp, the inspiration for The Sound of Music, Rabbi Immanuel Jakubowicz, who became the chief rabbi of Great Britain, Michael Marx, the founder of Marks and Spencer's, Sir Montague Burton, the founder of Burton's. Be merciful, even as your Father is merciful, says Jesus in our New Testament reading this morning. We've heard about how Joseph was merciful to his brothers, even after the terrible thing that they did to him. We thought about how Jesus calls us to love all people, even those who treat us badly and those who we may be tempted to mistrust. Let us go and do as Jesus calls us, to love others and to show them the mercy that we would hope for that others would show us if we were in the same situation that they are in. But let us too call on Christ to help us and to give us the strength we need in this challenge, to be his servants and his hands, to do what we can to help those in need and those he has entrusted to our care. Amen. And thanks be to God.